Welcome to Cast and Crank Podcast. Today we have Brian Sanner from LK Lures. Brian's a super cool dude. He helped donate when we did a giveaway some lures, and he tells us his story. And go support him if you can. Follow him on Instagram on LK Lures. He's got all kinds of different lures. I'm sure if you message him, he'll give you a breakdown on what he has, but his weed list is a pretty big deal. Check that out. Thanks to everyone that entered the Damiki giveaway. It helped out a lot. So whoever won, the people that won is Alexis 13x7 or 13x7, Memo Valenzuela 9, and Chasing Tailfish. I got a hold of them already. They'll get a nice package from Damiki. And yeah, and the next one we have coming up, I think in a couple weeks, will be a Phoenix M1 when Phoenix comes on. So that'll be another fun one. And don't forget to check out Ambitious Ales. They're our beer sponsor. They help everyone get a buzz on when they come on the podcast. So check them out too. I'm going to do a short read, and then we'll have our professional voiceover guy, Shannon, come and do it up for us. So Ambitious Ales is a microbrewery located in the beautiful community of Bixby Knolls in Long Beach, California. They serve classic beer styles with unique ingredients that are perfect for both the craft beer enthusiast and those new to craft beer. Beer isn't your thing? This is still the spot for you. Ambitious Ales prides himself in offering beers that even the non-beer drinker may enjoy. If you still can't find a beer that you dig, then sip on some homemade cold brew coffee or the refreshing cold pop. So tell me about the beer, you say. I've been drinking right now is the Fleurs and the IPA. I think it's called Clock. I forgot what it's called, but I'll have to look. But their IPAs are great. They're Belgian table beer, I guess that's what it's called. It's really good. My wife likes that. So if you're a girl, you're going to like that one. So go check them out. They're located on 4019 Atlantic Avenue in Long Beach. Stop by and say hi. And they have a patio, so if you guys have dogs, you can bring a dog there and hang out. So check that out, and hopefully we'll have something soon on that. And listen to the podcast. Hope you guys enjoy this one. We got another one this week. I think it's going to be on Thursday. Thursday or Friday will be Peck from Gray Fishers, Barrio Boys. They do both those things. All right, listen. Bye.
The Bite Journal is our newest sponsor, and if you like the rawness of Cast and Crank, its 132 pages are for you. The Bite Journal is all about blood, scales, and roots. Surprising subjects. Long-form investigations of famous vessels and epic destinations. Profiles of honored pioneers and respected young guns alike, and a half scoop of commercial fishing intel along the way. If it's legit, it fits. If it's trendy, poor value, won't be here next cycle, or irrelevant to your fishery, pass. Such rich waters deserve a vivid, authoritative publication of record, and the Bite has gladly accepted that challenge. Each edition features a raft of articles equivalent in page count to any three copies of a standard fishing periodical. The Bite isn't for everyone, but if you favor a limited load, high results experience, you just found your ride. Subscribe at thebitejournal.com, and if you are not following them on Instagram at the_bite, B-I-G-H-T, you are blowing it.
Welcome to Cast and Crank Podcast. Today I have Brian Sanner with LK Lures.
Hello.
He was part of the giveaway, which I need to still, it's off Saturday. It's been a week since it fucking went out, I know. I need to send out the giveaway win, but he was the guy that donated the LK Lures, weedless baits. You make all kinds of baits, not just weedless, correct?
I make
a 5-inch.
I make a couple different size swim baits, you know, but I primarily stick to the weedless because I like pouring them. I mean, and they're easy enough for me to pour. They just seem to be, when I look at the end product, I'm happier looking at a weedless than I am at a regular swim bait.
Do you fish the weedless more, you think?
I think I do nowadays because I'm fishing more areas that are conducive to fishing a weedless bait as opposed to a regular swim bait. I think I like it better. I think it's definitely nice to get a reaction bite, you know, where you could actually see the fish eat the bait. And,
yeah.
You know, and, I, you know, it's just, to me, it just seems a little more exciting.
So then you, you kind of focus more on tuning your weedless bait then. Well, I now do. It's pretty tuned.
Yeah.
But before you were focusing more on, tuning that weedless than your other baits.
Right.
But I mean, you still have a regular swim bait.
Regular swim baits. And I think, you know, it's really hard to mess up a swim bait, you know, because I mean, because the lead head is just going to dictate what that bait does.
Yeah.
It's going to keep it down. It's going to keep it swimming straight, more or less, you know, and you don't really have a lot of problems with those, but weedless baits are, to me, are a lot more fickle. They're harder to get to do what you want to do if it's not balanced right, you know, and then it's the bait itself, but then it's also the rigging, you know, if people don't rig them right. My baits in the past, it seemed to be a little more sensitive to being rigged right. It had to, the eye of the hook had to be right center line of the nose, hook coming through the back of the bait in the center, not off to the side. And other baits, you know, like ponchos, you know, it seemed to be a little more forgiving, you know.
So I mean, who's I talking to? I don't say it's Jeff Leifson. Mm-hmm. Saying how you tune a crankbait, you almost got to put that eye hole screw perfectly inside of the weedless to get it to swim correctly too.
Right.
Because if it's off to the side, it's going to swim fucked up.
And that's the kind of the, I still have a problem sometimes rigging them right, you know, because it seems like even with the owner, that the springs that they put on the center point springs, mm-hmm. you put that point in the center of the bait and it doesn't always put that hook, the eye in the center. You kind of have to, you know, fudge it mm-hmm. to the right, you know, just, you know, a hair just to get that eye to line up right in the bait.
Yeah.
And some baits, like I say, they're a little more forgiving. So if you're off a little bit, it doesn't really affect the way the bait operates in the water. So,
yeah. So when you started making your bait, how long ago was this?
Ooh, wow. I want to say it was maybe, I don't know, 8, 10 years ago, maybe 8 years or something like that ago.
Was, you were around when Pearl?
Yes.
Was no, you,
yeah, they were.
Pearl kind of already had something?
Yeah, Pearl already had all that stuff out. They already had their weedless bait. They already had what I think they called it, like a slug. It's kind of a dragon tongue, I think he mm-hmm. called it. And
MC
Corey
had theirs,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Corey had his.
Or just
yeah.
the slug?
No, he had the weedless
okay.
before I was doing it.
Okay.
And, you know, it was kind of the reason why I started making the weedless, because, you know, that was kind of the new thing. You know, the slug was kind of a new thing, but it was hard to use. The hookup ratio wasn't very good on them, but you got a lot of blow-ups and a lot of, you know, visuals, but they were just, a lot of people weren't getting a really good hookup rate on it. And I don't know if it was because it was such a fat piece of plastic, mm-hmm. you know, that his big slug. But it definitely got the fish's attention. But the weedless was just the next evolution. It just worked so much better. The hookup ratios were, you know, right on.
Tail,
you know,
kicking, probably.
Yeah.
Helped. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, but he... I don't know who the actual pioneer of the whole weedless thing was, if it was the Mondo bait guy or who created it, you know, but there was a lot of guys that followed suit.
Mm-hmm. And yours, what made you want to make yours?
Weedless baits or baits in general?
Your weedless bait.
Basically,
were you making baits before the weedless?
Yeah, I was making baits before the weedless.
Okay.
But the weedless bait was because, you know, I had just evolved from, you know, kayak to boat mm-hmm. fishing, and that's about when the weedless bait came out, and we started using Corey's, you know, his weedless, and it was just so much, it was just like a new thing. It was like, wow, it's so exciting to see these fish come up and inhale the bait or blow it out of the water, or, you know. And, you know, just like everything else, where I live, you know, San Bernardino, you don't have many options to, you know, as far as everything's a long drive to get to. So I started doing my own stuff, you know, just like everything else. When I first started making baits, it was just to necessities.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'd go to the tackle store and they would never have the size of bait I needed in the color I needed, you know. And
so
it was
when
kind
you
of a
first
bummer.
Started, though, you were just pulling regular swim baits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I probably started out like a lot of, you know, guys. You know, I took a fish trap and I did a really crappy mold of it, you know. And I thought to myself, you know, it'd be nice to do one that was mine, you mm-hmm. know. And I had no idea how to make a bait. I never conferred with anybody, never talked to anyone. I kind of figured it out.
And there was on my own. YouTube wasn't really a big presence then.
No,
not 10 years ago.
No, right? And I wasn't very good at on computers and whatnot back then, anyways. You know, it's kind of funny.
Are you good now?
No. I'm still not very good. I know just enough to get in trouble. And that's what, you know. But, yeah, it was funny. I sat there one day. I was like, you know, these guys talk about carving baits. I'm going to carve a bait of my own. So I grab a piece of wood from Home Depot, you know, just a regular piece of pine, you know.
Yeah.
I have no idea what I'm doing. And so I sit on the porch. And I got this knife. And I'm trying to – I draw this bait out. It looks pretty wonky, you know, and I'm kind of cutting at it. I'm like 2 hours, and I barely got anything done. I said, this is bull crap. And I kind of gave up on it, you know. And, you know, like I said, everything I know about making baits, I figured out on my own pretty much. Or watching, you know, or listening to people. You know, I don't think I don't know that I ever really reached out to anybody because it's just not what I'm comfortable with. I mean, you know, as far as that, you know, I'm not going to.
You don't want to bug anyone?
No. Say, hey, how do you? You know, because a lot of the guys I didn't know at the time, you know. Gary Reyes, he wasn't making baits at the time. I knew Pearl. I didn't know Mike Stenbridge personally, but I knew of him. I've seen him at the ramp a few times, you know, and he doesn't know me. He probably didn't know me from the Man in the Moon. But,
yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to want to reach out to someone like that when I don't even know him, you know, and he doesn't know who I am. So.
And this isn't social media time. This is like you go up to the dude and you go, hey, kind of time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was... You know, and I figured out how to do it. A lot of guys use the clay, and I'm no good at that. And I tried it once, and I'm like, this is not going to work. And other guys are really great at it, you know, and it's just not my medium.
Yeah. I like wood. Like, I've made some of my own baits. I think it's fun to me, like, just carving out of wood.
Yeah.
And I feel like the only problem I ever had was smoothing out the wood plug. Yeah. I feel like I could never get it fucking... perfectly smooth.
It's tough. I mean, there's the right kind of wood to use, and there's the stuff that isn't as good for making baits, and that's what I use, the crappy stuff from Home Depot.
Wood.
I mean,
guys, did you end up buying like a birch or something? Like,
no, I think guys, you know, there's like basswood I hear is really good for mm-hmm. using hand tools mm-hmm. to get finer details in it without the wood getting all splintered and you know, frayed looking. And but that's why my baits don't have a ton of detail in it, you know. And at first I was dead set against all that because it's like it caught the fisherman, not the fish, mm-hmm. you know. And then after a while, I was like, you know, it's what they want, you know. You can't win.
You need to catch both of them, right?
You do. You know, I mean, you really do. And, you know, I did my baits with the eyes that kind of just like little bubble eye, you know, stick out, kind of like a MC style, you know, eyeball. And I was like, I remember telling Bobby, it's like, that's all bull crap. I'm never putting eyes on my stuff, you know what I mean? And I didn't do it really. Now I'm doing it, but I didn't do it because that's what people wanted, you know, just because it's kind of the evolution for me, you know. When I first started making my first weedless bait is the one I use still today, and it's ugly. I mean, it really is. It doesn't look like anything.
Yeah.
It's a popsicle stick with a tail on it.
Uh-huh.
But it gets bit everywhere we go. And even to this day, you know. And it's pretty amazing. It just, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, just really, if you lined up Pearl and all these, Corey's bait and everything, and you put my old 7-inch in there, I think if you said, okay, guys, pick your favorite bait, that bait would still be left on the table. Yeah.
But you have an action on it that's kind of different.
Yeah, and I think a lot of guys, everyone's different on what they want from a bait. Some guys want a bait that has a waggle, you know, mm-hmm. a heavy thump, you know, and I don't. I mean, that's just my thing, and you're never going to please everybody. Mm-hmm. Some people want that, some people don't, and I don't want it.
And you feel like you're making these baits for yourself, kind of, too.
I do.
Yeah.
I do, because it's what I'm the primary user of them, you know. I mean, it's obviously I'm not getting rich, you know. And I don't have them in tackle stores, and I've had the opportunities to, and thankfully I rejected the opportunities only because they weren't ready.
Had a chance.
Well, I've had opportunities. I've, you know, where I could have had them in tackle stores, and from people, various people, you know, putting in the word or kind of trying to arrange things, but it wasn't ready for it. You know, I mean, I was using really bad plastic at the time, and I think anyone who got baits from me in the beginning could attest to that. I mean, and I think that's probably why I've suffered to this day, even though it's, I've changed the plastics and everything's better now. I think it's kind of with certain people, it's once bit, twice shy. You know, they've gotten burned, you know, not burned, like I didn't try to rip anyone, but the plastic was bad. And then if they sat around for a while, they just kind of melted, you know? I mean, as far as they leached a lot of oil out of the plastic. Yeah. And, you know, I've seen that with other baits and other companies too, you know, and it was just one particular manufacturer of plastic.
How many gallons did you pour of that?
Oh, when I first started.
That's all.
A ton of baits, you know. Wow. And there's guys that got, you know, that told me about it, and I felt bad, you know, and I replaced some of their baits, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it was nowadays people just probably associate that have bought my baits before that don't buy them anymore. They probably just think it's the same product, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, how long ago was that? I mean, shit.
At least 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Last 3 years, I switched it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
does the plastic? So I know Mike, we had him on. He uses a heavier, thicker plastic. Do you like to use something with a little more action in it? That's a little softer?
Yeah, I think he's using like Poncho. They use that real.
He said he used Lurecraft.
Yeah, Lurecraft. It's what I'm using now.
Okay.
But they're using the real heavy blend, mm-hmm. you know, the heavy mix. And I'm using the 60-40 where it's saltwater blend.
60-40, do they pre-mix it for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's still a saltwater plastic, but mm-hmm. it's not as rigid or stiff as the stuff that they're using.
Okay.
And, you know, and Poncho and Pearl, you know, that works fine for them because their baits have that bigger profile and they have that bigger tail that's going to push more water. It's going to, even though their baits are plastic is a lot harder, that tail is just going to push that water a lot more. It's going to get the action still, you know, mm-hmm. where mine probably, it'd probably kill the action a little bit because my tails are a little thinner and my baits are have more of a shimmy than a thump. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and that's what I like. When you look at a bait in the wild, you know, in the water fleeing from, like if you see bait fish fleeing from a calico in the water, you're not going to see them just going all wonky and rolling on their sides and stuff like that. They're darting through the water. They're just, you know, they're tracking straight, but their tails are just doing that little tight wiggle.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what a lot of mine do. And everyone's gets bit. I mean, it's just use whatever is appropriate at the time.
And you feel like maybe the user can make that change too. Like how you work it, right?
Yeah, to a certain degree.
Okay.
To a certain degree, I mean, that the tail is just going to dictate everything. You know, the tail on that bait is going to make that bait swim with a waggle or a heavy thump, you know, and the faster you do it, like a fast wind, it might straighten it out a little bit, but it's still going to have that heavy, you know, mm-hmm. thump to it. It's just going to be moving a lot faster.
Yeah.
And my bait, you know, it tracks. It's one of those bait that tracks, and it has a shimmy to it. And you can wind it faster, and it'll just, you know, tail just move tighter. And the calico bass, they see everything, whether it's, you know, a heavy waggle or a little shimmy. They're going to stay see it, you know. It might induce more bites, you know. And my baits are just an alternative. It's not, they're, you know, I don't make the best baits out there. You know, I don't make the only bait out there. It's just an alternative to everyone else's, you know.
Do you ever fish them in freshwater?
Do I ever fish them?
Do you fish freshwater at all?
No, not since I was probably 10. Oh, fuck. No, I mean, I think everyone started their...
How old were you started getting serious about calico?
It was probably after I came out of the Army. And we went through the whole progression of fishing, you know, a kid lake, graduate to the party boats, you know, then I didn't like the party boat scene. It was just too many, you know, too many people and too many problems. And so we went to the next thing. We float tubing, mm-hmm. you know, and we were float tubing Cabrillo. We launching through the surf, you know.
So you were part of the kind of original calico. I mean, when were you float tubing Cabrillo? How old were you? What year was this?
Well, it was probably maybe 24, 25-ish, you know?
So it was 90...
94... 96, 97, maybe?
And you were float tubing it then? Were you just doing live bait?
No, we were fishing fish traps. That was before I was making
baits. So that's what I'm trying to get at is, were you around when this kind of whole thing kind of came about? Kind of like, so Mike talks about him running to the islands and float tubing Long Beach Harbor. You're doing it at the same time almost, correct?
I guess so, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
in a different way, you didn't yeah. know Mike. You know Mike when then or no?
No, I didn't know him back then. No. I don't know how long he's been doing pearl swim baits, but you know, I don't know that I even knew there was a pearl swim bait back when I was float tubing.
Okay. Which I don't think there might have, but you guys, I think, were doing the same thing
yeah,
at the same
because,
time.
Yeah, because I think he does everything through performance tackle. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, the only tackle store I really went to, because I grew up in Norwalk, the only one I went to was Save on Tackle. You know,
oh, really? Santa Fe Springs. Did you know Matt then? Matt. Koch?
No, but I knew Landisfind.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So you've known him for a long time.
I've known him for a long time. Yeah. We used to fish on the out of Belmont Pier on the half-day boat and whatnot together. Three-quarter-day half-day boats a lot, you know. We were never, you know, buddy-buddy. We knew each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then...
Did you have a guy you still fish with that you have fished with since then? Like a buddy that you
fish
with?
Yeah, well, I grew with the guy I went to high school with, Robert Yakimonis. I fished with him all the time. You know,
oh, you guys have both kind of done the same.
He's got his own boat and I got my boat. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a pilot house style boat. And, mm-hmm. you know, the only when I fish with him, we're usually fishing, you know, Coronados or offshore. Yeah. Whatnot, you know, because his boat doesn't really lend itself well to fishing coastal stuff like I do.
Yeah. So you were 24 launching float tubing Cabrillo like a madman.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
We did that for a while. And then we did the kayak. We just whatever generic kayak we can get. And I think. Mine was like the most generic kayak. I think we bought it at some
Walmart or something.
Yeah, something like that for real. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember buying a Rhino bar from Jeff Krieger. You know, and hooking that up on the boat. You know, put my tackle, clip it to the bar, and then the rods do that thing. And yeah, Cabrillo, we had a lot of really bad landings, you know, crashes coming in.
Did you lose a lot of tackle?
Yeah, we had a yard sale or two.
Fuck.
Yeah, because it's kind of a short break over there. It's just, you know, you
got
to
off the beach, you're doing it.
Yeah.
So you're going, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's, you know, going out is no big deal on a kayak to me. I mean, if there's a big wave coming, a lot of times you could punch through it if you're lined up on it right.
It's surfing but in.
Coming in, I always get that feeling in the pit of my stomach when I look at the, if I'm like a mile off the beach and I could see the white water. I just think, man, it's going to be a really painful landing. It's going to be really tough because you got to time it right. And you got to have a kayak that tracks well, you know, and you got to be able to know how to use the kayak and how to lean into it with the paddle. And yeah, Cabrillo being that it breaks right on the shore like that, it's not a wave that rolls from like quarter mile out. And, you know, it humps up and breaks right there on the beach and it gets big.
Did you, how long did you kayak fish for?
I probably did the whole kayak thing for probably, I would guess, maybe 7 years.
Tournaments,
Plastic Navy.
Did you fish Moyer?
Did
you fish against Matt Moyer?
Yeah, yeah. Back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun back then, you know. I think they had the, you know, back then they had the biggest kayak tournaments, you know, where it had 200 plus, 250 kayakers and... There was 1 year, both, I forget what year it was, they were both spotty tournaments out of Mission Bay, and I think there was like 250 kayakers, and I won that tournament.
Oh, wow.
And then a couple months later, we had another tournament in Mission Bay, and I won that one.
Spotties, or was it?
Spotties, yeah. I think I had five spotted bay bass that was almost 12 pounds.
How big were those fucking
I had things? One that was over three, and the rest were like two, you know.
What's your PB spotty?
I don't know. I know I've had to have a couple that were a little bit north of 4 pounds, but I never put a scale
locally
on them.
Or like down south.
No, one of them was Shelter Island,
really,
San Diego Bay, and the other one was Newport.
Newport
on a watermelon, on a watermelon spinnerbait.
On your kayak?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And we did. We didn't get a. I had a scale on the boat. We were pre-fishing for one of the Plastic Navy tournaments, and I caught this monster. It was giant. I mean, it was probably one of my bigger spotties in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my buddy over, and I was going to take a picture, and then, you know, a couple other tournament guys were coming that way. I'm like, God, I don't want them to see it, you know? You know, because everyone's got their eyes everywhere, just like boat tournaments.
Do you feel like it's still like that now?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that doesn't change. Everyone's got their eye on everyone else. Everyone's, you know, surfing the internet trying to look for someone to slip and put a background somewhere. Or
I saw Eric Bent one time. He's talking about on a podcast where he tied up all like weird Carolina rig shit, random shit, and then when he got out, he retied everything.
Yeah, well, that's what I tell Carrie, my partner. I was like, because it got like that. It's what I call everyone shows up in the morning for the tournament and they boat check everybody.
Yeah.
Like you walk up and say, hey, what's going on? And you're looking at his rods the whole time. You know, you see what he's got tied on. And I told him, I said, you know what? Just don't get the line to the guides. Don't put on shit until we get out, launch the boat. You know
what I mean? Really? You just not say
that
fuck it.
Not that there's any secrets, but back then, you know, and I got busted by Landisfine a few times, you know, and Matt Kim from Aruru, you know, because of trying to, you know, bait and switch or rope-a-dope him or not give him the true dope, you know. But back then, I felt like I really, before I had the Robalo, when I had a 90-horse Century, you know, and it was a fast boat, but not when these guys are fishing, you know, 150 to 300-horse motor. Well,
what do you have? You have a 200 on your Robalo?
I do now, and it's still not the fastest boat. You know, truth be told, I mean, Bobby's Whaler, that thing is a friggin' monster, man. That thing moves pretty good for 150. I had the Robalo pegged, and I was just keeping up with him.
Fuck.
You know?
I've been looking. I think that might be my next boat. Affordability. Because everyone I talk, Robalo. Because I'm like, you could look maybe in the 50s, you know, something around there.
Yeah.
I can't afford it.
And, you know, I still hear a lot of people saying that, you know, even the bigger Rangers, you know, they just still don't ride like very well. You know, I mean, and everyone I talked to that owned a Bahia, I mean, no offense to the Rangers, you know, but they just, everyone just wasn't very happy with the ride on it. You
really?
Know? I mean, I don't know what it was, but it said it, they would say that the ass of the boat would just hit real hard all the time. And
the only thing I could say is I've been on Benny's. It was wet, but I mean, we're sitting on those back seats. So I, other than that, it was fine. Bobby's, I've been on, and Eric Bent's, his dad's boat, Jerry, they fucking were smooth as shit. Like, I've never been on a boat like I was like, now I saw Garrett take off in his brand new ring. I'm like, fuck, that thing jammed.
I know. Dude. I saw him take off too, and I watched him keep pulling away from me. But that's just the way it is. I mean, I'm happy with what I got. You know, it's not the best riding boat in the world, but it's a ton better than the Century.
What you had before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No,
how long did you fish your old boat for?
5 years.
Really?
Yeah. It was a great boat. I wish I had it still. I mean, I just didn't have any room in my driveway for it. You know?
Yeah.
But it was really a good boat. I mean, it had everything. You know, it had the iPilot trolling motor, had the onboard alternator charger. It was ready to go. I mean, it was a good boat.
Yeah.
You know, and I was sad to see it go, but, you know, I was excited for the new boat.
Oh, of course.
Just opens up a lot more.
And you bought that 5 years ago, then you bought? 4 years ago?
The Century?
No, the
Robalo? Uh-huh. No, I've bought it 2 years ago.
2 years ago? Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So it's been in the shop for the last month.
What happened?
Well, not the boat, but the trailer. It's that West Coast trailer getting worked on.
I got to do that. I haven't done it in 3 years.
Yeah. I got, you know, not that it had a ton of issues. The fender brackets were busted, so I had to get the fender brackets repaired, and I got...
You don't do that yourself?
No.
I know you're a handy guy. You're an electrician, right?
Yeah, but the brackets were some kind of manufactured tubing, you know, that connected to the trailer frame itself, and it let the guys at West Coast, they know what they're doing, you know, fix it right.
Yeah.
That way I don't have to worry about it, and I got rid of the axles on my trailer. It's a two-axle trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got rid of the bearings, the regular Zerk fitting type, and I'm getting the sealed hubs on there.
How much is that?
I think for both axles, you know, it's quite a bit of work. I mean, they're going to replace the brakes.
Yeah.
You know, they got to fix the fenders. You
have trailer brakes on there, too.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I think I can't remember if it had brakes on both axles, but they're putting brakes on both axles now. So it just helps save the brakes on your truck.
Yeah.
So I think all said and done, it's probably going to be around $3,000. You know, not bad. It's a good investment. Yeah. You know, because nothing worse than getting your, and I've had on my, I had an old Mako, and I blew a bearing, and I lost the entire wheel on the freeway somewhere.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I don't even know where it's at right now, but destroyed the axle, destroyed the fender, left a big skid mark on the side of the boat.
I got to fucking take my, I haven't had my trailer serviced once. I've had it for through my boat for 4 years. Yeah. I've done enough shit on that boat.
Yeah, no, for me, it's a peace of mind. You know, I want to be able to know that I can leave my house and drive to Ventura and back and not have to worry about blowing a bearing somewhere. Because yeah. I've heard a lot of guys that fish SWBA and SBS, you know, couldn't make the tournament because they blew a bearing on the way to the, you know, to the venue or on the way home or whatnot. Or they get there and then something happened, you know.
So you were fishing SWBA then too?
Yeah.
How long did you fish SWBA?
I want to say at least five to six years.
Maybe? So pretty like almost the whole.
Yeah, I was fishing it when a lot of the guys used to fish it, you know, and then, you know, they all kind of, everyone kind of went their own way. You know, you don't really see the same faces anymore. It's replaced by a lot of new guys. And same thing with SBS, you know.
Yeah.
You get a lot of new faces, which is good, you know. I was telling my partner, I said, I just don't know whether or not I'm going to actually fish tournaments next year.
Really?
I just got Long Beach overdose this year. And it was too much for me. I was like, everything was Long Beach, Long Beach, Long Beach, and a San Diego sprinkled in. There was nothing in between. It got kind of stale to
me. You want Newport?
Well, I would have appreciated Newport, especially in the championship when it came to day two, because Spotty's in Long Beach for me is a death sentence.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like fishing in crowds, you know, and I knew that Alamitos and Huntington Harbor were just going to, that's where everyone's going.
Yeah.
And there was going to be a handful of people of dopes, and I was one of them that fished Long Beach proper.
Yeah.
And we caught the shit out of sand bass. We probably had we had our biggest sand bass bag of the entire year fishing in the harbor for spotties than we did fishing on the stones and the reeds outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, that was our first D&W.
Really?
Oh yeah. No and I way. Remember yeah, you know, yeah, but everyone, you got to take your lumps. I mean, I didn't complain about it, you know.
Yeah.
It happens, you know. I don't regret, you know, the decisions we made, you know. I think we probably could have done things differently for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, you know, I was over it. You know, day one, we did okay. Day two, I was like, you know, I could see the writing on the wall, you know.
So you're ready to just fun fish and
kind of say, fuck it. And I'm not a fan of 2-day championships. I hate them with a passion. I hate 2-day championships.
Do you miss running to the island to do tournaments?
I never really did, though, because my boat was
back then
smaller you were and the I boat. Just didn't. You know, I just didn't feel like making a run to the island because, you know, even fishing SWBA, he had the Ventura tournament, which I love that place. I love Ventura. I love fishing Channel Islands, mm-hmm. you know, because it's, you know, from the harbor, you're like 15 miles from the island. You know, Catalina is maybe 19, 20. San Clemente is like, you know, why do I want to drive 60 miles in a boat?
Do you go there?
No.
Never.
Not on my boat. No. I've gone on other people's boats.
You won't go on your boat?
I don't want to say I won't. I will. But if I have my choices, I'd rather drive towing my boat to Oxnard and launch out of Oxnard to go fish Channel Islands and take a 15 to 17 mile run on the water as opposed to a 60 mile one way to the front side of Clemente. Plus all the gas on the boat, you know.
God.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys don't like to drive. I'll drive up there because I think it's still one of the last places where you can get a really good calico bite going on. I think Clemente gets hammered a lot.
Catalina, too. Same
thing. And then you got to deal with the closures around San Clemente Island for the Navy operations and whatnot. Then you got to deal with, you know, okay, we had a good crossing, but the wind's coming up and we're going to get our ass beat for 60 miles going home. You know what I mean? And I know a lot of the guys, man, like Reyes and Jay Jones and those guys are pretty hardcore. I mean, they do that stuff a lot and they just get beat up a lot, but they keep going back, which is, you know,
yeah,
if that's what they enjoy, you know, so be it. You know,
you gotta throw an A-rig, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
You're not an A-rig guy.
No.
You hate them, huh?
I don't say I hate them. I've never really fished them enough to get the bug, to really be like, that's my go-to, you know, I got to have one tied on. I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're open to different opinion, like different baits. You won't just
And I think that's where Kerry, my partner, he's a good partner in that sense because I get kind of scope locked on one thing, and it's funny because I tie on the same stuff every time because it's what gets bit. But I'm open to anything. I'll throw anything, but I start out with the tried and true. You know, for the situation, I know Santa Monica. If I'm fishing like Malibu, I know this bait and this color works 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah,
you know, Long Beach. Breakwall, this. Long Beach, PV, that. And he's good at that. Like, I'll get scope locked on one thing, and then he'll be trying some oddball thing, and he'll just start getting crushed on it. And I think it was year before last, Jerry had the King of the Calicos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really pumped up about that tournament. You know, it was three tournaments. And it was all, you know, calico only, islands, blah, 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 you know. The first one was Mission Bay, and it was kind of disappointing. He only got, I think, 12 boats.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. I mean, this is what you guys wanted. You guys, calicos
yeah.
only.
Yeah.
You know, fish Mexico, fish Clemente, you know. Yeah. And only drew 12 people, and I couldn't, it scratched my head. But the really? Funny thing was, yeah, the funny thing was, we launched out of Mission Bay for that first one. And we launched in the dark. I think it was like 4 o'clock or something like that. It was some crazy hour, you know, gave time for the guys to run and get there at daybreak, you know. Okay. So we had, out of those 12 people, you had a handful that went to Clemente. And then you had another.
Who were the guys that entered that one?
Anchored, mm-hmm. Team Anchored, you know, Aruru, Matt and Andy, Jay Jones, okay. Gary Reyes, Ty Ponder, you know, those type of guys. And there was a handful of guys that ran down 50, 60 miles down into Mexico,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there was a handful, maybe one or two boats that went to the Coronados. And so everyone's taken off. They're running full throttle. And me and Carrie were fishing spotties in Mission Bay in the dark. So I never get bit in the dark. So we just stayed in the harbor
yeah.
until it got light, and we were fishing spotties, you know, and got light. We drove out of the harbor, went about maybe a quarter mile, and almost won it. You know, I think we ended up in third.
Where'd you guys just fish kelp?
Yeah. Fished wow. the kelp on the weedless. Yeah. yeah, it was probably one of the best weedless bait bites I've ever had in Point Loma.
Do you like fishing down there a lot? Pressured more? Or
I think lately, yeah. yeah. I think you got guys that are just going out there and just beating the same shit up all the time. You know, and it just gets a little old, you know. And, you know, it just, you got to fight the party boats for some of the, like, you go to the, sorry, you get to, you go to the pipe, and you got, mm-hmm. at certain times of the year, you got like 5 or 6 sporties anchored up on it.
Fuck.
The good thing about tournament fishing is that we're out there before them, and I'm sure they're thinking the same thing when they go to the pipe on one Saturday, and all of a sudden they look out their fucking window, and there's like, you know, 20 boats locked up all over the yeah. pipe, and they're like, what the F, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just one day out of their lives, you know, I think they'll live.
Yeah. But you got your bait done by, what was it when they remolded it? What was the name of that?
Row Industries.
Yeah, that yeah. thing is fucking cool. I like that.
It came out pretty good. Yeah. I mean,
have you poured a lot already of the since you did that?
I have. Yeah. I have. And I know it's a different RTV that they use. And, you know, you really got to heat that mold up.
That mold RTV yes. too. Okay.
Yeah, but it's a different. It's a stiffer RTV.
It's like it's a machine almost, right?
No, it's still poured. They still have what they did was they took my master, which was
and then they
did a 3D okay. print of it,
mm-hmm.
and they scanned it right and fixed any imperfections as far as making it
thicker balanced. On one side. Or,
well, yeah. balance it from head to tail. That
yeah.
the right side is a mirror image of the left side,
uh-huh.
and everything's concentric. Everything's straight. You know, there's no it's not leaning to one side. Yeah. You know? And from there, I had them pour me a few molds, and they still have the master just in case I want more molds. Mm-hmm. It's easier for them to pour it. But this mold, it's a lot stiffer plastic, and I've noticed that I have to warm up the mold a lot more as far as run more, you know, dummy plastic through it to get it up to temperature, because I find that when it's cold, you get a lot of that orange peel look on it. It has a lot of dimples on the
that's on the one bait. Thing I never learned. Like I didn't know about heating up the mold, and I'd yeah. be like, why the fuck is it looking
it's
like
got that orange peel? That's yeah, what they call yeah, that orange peel. Yeah. And it's because the mold's not up to temperature, mm-hmm. you know, and it's cooler. It's a lot cooler than the hot plastic, and you kind of get, I think, like tiny micro bubbles on yeah. the face, you know. I don't like it either. And yeah. that's the one thing with these new molds. I got to really.
Did you you could redo them though, right? I mean, you yeah. could just pour a master
right,
from
right
that,
out of that, right?
But it's like a
and polish it more because I think now
you don't feel like it's as polished as it was.
I don't think it is. I think you know the guys did a really great job on it. I mean, no, I got no complaints. If I had to nitpick, I would say it. You know, polish the master a little more that way because it seems like now that the baits are a lot more like of a matte finish as opposed to that glassy.
And that's that I like talking about this because what if there's a guy that's a bait maker thinking about doing this? I've never heard anyone talk about how it fucking worked out. So it's cool to hear you talk about it and going, well, this is what I think.
And I don't know what other people do because I don't talk to like Gary about his process or Poncho about his process.
And the thing that I think is different with yours, some people said, I don't want to do that because I feel like the imperfection is part of the bait. Like that's how it swims, which is the argument to like what you think will symmetrical now.
I like clarity. I like when I pour a clear belly, I want to see it clear and not opaque as far, unless I want to make the belly opaque.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I don't know how anybody else finishes their baits, their masters, you know, I mean, I just use a piece of plywood, not plywood, but a piece of, what is it, like 1x2 pine, cheap pine. But I use a Dremel and I draw my shape out and I take off all the heavy wood and I shape it and I get it really nice and then you do a lot of hand sanding. But when I finish after I get it, you know, with really fine sandpaper, I get it nice and smooth, really nice, clean it off really well, wipe, get all the dust off it and all this other stuff. And I just use a urethane.
Really?
I just spray it with a urethane, you know what I mean? Get several layers of that.
How many coats? Just one coat?
No, because one won't do it.
Because one coat,
it just seems to kind of, the wood just kind of absorbs it. And then until you build up layers of it. And it's usually pretty smooth, you know, and I'll sit there just with a...
Four or five
coats, maybe more, yeah. You know. Wow. And you don't want to put it on too heavy because you get runs, you know. You just want to get it enough so it's shiny. And then you let it sit for a couple hours, you know, or you just get that really fast drying stuff. Then you just shoot it up with some more. It could take 2 or 3 days to get it to where...
You're master of the way.
Yeah, and the way I do my boxes, too, is probably a lot different than what everyone else. A little more work, I guess. You know, like, I'll take the wooden master and I'll drill, and depending on the size of it, I'll drill maybe 4 to 5 small holes in the back. And I'll take, like, a 632 by, you know, 1 inch or 1 1/4 machine bolt, and I'll cut the head off it, and I'll get some of that... super glue the gel, and I'll put some in the hole I drilled in the back of the bait, and I'll insert those pins in there, and then I'll get a flat piece of wood, you know, that has a good coating that the RTV doesn't stick to, and I drill holes and I stick the pins through there and I bolt it down so it sucks it down really hard to the bottom. You don't really get a lot of that RTV that wants to run into.
So this is the flat part you're doing it on,
and then I just do a wooden box around it. It's a lot more.
You know what I like using is a melamine.
And some guys use that corrugated plastic.
I have that too.
The hot glue gun or whatever, yeah, you know, or Legos.
Well, the corrugated plastic, the only thing I don't like is you don't get a perfect square mold. Like, I take my time to do it. I want it to be like perfect.
Yeah.
So I made one of some fucking bait and it looks like shit because I use that corrugated plastic.
And I know a lot of guys like Pearl, I'm sure, does that. I know Gary does that. You know, they do production molds. What I mean by that is they'll have.
They pour like 10 baits.
Yeah, they'll have one chunk of RTV that has maybe 5 to 8 cavities in there. And every single one of mine is a single cavity.
Oh, you do?
Single pours. Yeah, because the way I pour my baits, you know, to get a certain effect, it's easier with a single cavity. Yeah.
So Mike likes to pour he waits a while between his colors. Do you do the same thing? You wait a little while between your colors?
If I'm pouring hard lines, okay. You know, and I'm not, in a while for me, it's like maybe 30 seconds or less.
Okay.
Because when you pour a belly and you're doing a 3-color bait, when you pour your belly and tail, that plastic is going to start to skin over on the top in, you know, less than 30 seconds. And you pour your middle strip, but you want it to be, the middle strip to be hot enough and the bottom belly to still be hot enough that they'll fuse together still, you know. And a lot of times if you wait too long, you get separation, parting lines where sometimes the baits will actually come apart in the colors, you know. So, but I do a lot of mine now. I still do a lot of baits in hard lines, but I do a lot of like blending the colors, you know, get them to kind of blend together. And they end up with a totally different color where they meet sometimes, and it gives it a good effect, you know.
You don't paint your baits, do you?
No.
Because your colors, I'll give you one thing, is they look a lot different than other baits. Where they blend, but they blend very nicely.
Yeah.
It's like like you said, the 30 seconds, I could see that happening because they blend really nice. They're kind of like a different looking bait. Like, that's the thing I'll give you, is your colors look different. Your bait looks a lot different than a lot of the other weedless baits, which I think is cool. Like, just something different, you know, gets bit. different stuff. Yeah. Split, you know,
and I, a lot of times when I'm blending colors, I won't even give it any time between, like, I'll pour the belly and tail, and as soon as I put down the pirate strip, I grab the other one, I pour right on top of it.
Wow.
You know, and it'll, you know, absorb into the other color so far, and it'll mix, and you don't have any of those lines, you know, like where
hard lines.
Yeah, hard lines are where the bait was a little, it was a little bit cold, and you could see the outline of, you know, the, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
and nice. You won't get those baits to pull apart or separate, delaminate, you know.
So when you were kind of like got into the bait making, Pearls around MC, Big Hammer, right?
Yeah, I think Reeves was definitely around, but he wasn't doing a weedless bait.
And the thing too is what Mike talks about, there was a San Diego scene and a like kind of a Orange County Long Beach scene, right?
And then there was Inland Empire scene, which was just me.
That was you, huh?
Yeah.
So yeah, there was kind of, there's a lot of different. So when I think of the bait makers, I think you and Poncho are kind of like on your own little thing, because you guys don't, you have your own little thing where you're like, I'm just doing it. If people want to come get it, it's fine.
Right.
Then you have the Pearls, MC, Big Hammer, you know, Reeves, kind of almost like you a little bit, maybe for San Diego, but I'm not sure. I'm only a couple years deep. So I'm kind of, it's a little bit of a separation where you guys go all have a little different outlook on the whole bait making procedure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times anymore, you post anything on social media, you got to keep posting on social media because you get forgotten about really fast.
You think that happens?
Yeah, I don't know what happens. Because it happens to me all the time. You know, like I'll post a picture of a bait that I just made and, you know, it'll go around for like maybe 4 or 5 days and then you won't hear a peep from it again. And if I want to actually sell a few baits, you know, if I like, oh, I need a couple quick bucks, you know, then I pump it up a little bit. And every time you post something or you pump up your bait a little bit, you get a lot, you get quite a few hits, you know, you don't get a ton of them, but I think that's kind of how I like it right now, because I have a day job and it's just really tough sometimes to come home and know that you've got like a dozen orders to fill. And these people get really antsy when you don't get their bait out real quick. I brought some stuff in my car. Just, but you know, you know what I mean. But you know, that's just the way people are. I mean, and I don't blame them. You know, they want.
But I
what
feel
they
like
want.
At the same time, you're not trying to look for that right now, because you're kind of on your own deal, and you could do that. I think with your bait, you could monetize off of it and do what you wanted it to do. But like you said, we just talked to Gray Fishers. They had a clothing company, and it's like, you have to take the time to make sure you post every 4 days, however the fuck much
you
got to
keep it relevant.
Yeah. And it's like, if you don't need to do that, you're like paying for your hobby pretty much.
No, but then, you do something like, then you get the critics that always come out. There's always a fucking critic for everything. You know what I mean? And that's like, I was telling you that this one bait that I saw that was two baits for $30. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how the hell are you going to pay $30 for these two baits? You know, I'm looking at the picture. They look really wonky. They look like crap to me. I mean, and I'm not trying to be a total a-hole, but that's just my opinion, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
And so, but I think at the same time, so a freshwater bait, people pay a lot more for a freshwater plastic than a saltwater.
It seems like it, yes.
Because your saltwater weedless is what, tops $6 to $10?
Yeah, tops. I mean, tops. It's just hard to justify getting anything more than that for a piece of plastic. You know, you try and you get shot down.
but then again, the market isn't that way, right? Like, you know, everyone's got to be on the same page to go, we're all going to be at this number.
Yeah, I just don't think that saltwater guys are willing to pay as much as the freshwater guy is for a bait that's basically the same thing. It's just plastic with the eyeball glued on it.
Yeah.
You put a weedless.
No one else does that, though. You do the eyeball, right?
I mean, do
for
now.
For saltwater.
I do now. Yeah. And at first I did, and I was against it because I thought, you know, it catches people, not the fish. You know, the fish don't really give a shit, but I kind of changed my tune a little bit. And I changed it, like I said earlier, because it's just kind of the evolution. It's kind of what I want now. Mm-hmm. It just looks good to me, you know. And does it help catch more fish? It might inspire another extra bite or two, you know. But I think a lot of times when you're fishing calico bass, they're an ambush predator. You know, a lot of times they're not taking the time to fully examine the bait. They're just seeing something dart by and they're taking the opportunity to eat it.
Yeah.
You know, and definitely I don't know that that works. I think it definitely works catching anglers though, because yeah, because they want to see that stuff. I mean, they see something like this and they're like, man, that looks really cool. I mean, and this is a really, really, really pretty bait.
Yeah.
You know, this guy right here.
I just fish it today. I mean, it swims really good too. I mean, we fish it at the lake.
That working class zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks good. I mean, it looks like a really good bait, you know?
And I'm sure you put time in just like anyone else. And that's why it's kind of like, it's a, just a different beast, I guess. Yeah.
And like the new bait I just got back. I mean, I put some up there for more than I typically sell them for because it was a lot more work involved to get it to that point.
Do you have a website?
I don't. No.
How do you do it? Like on a little...
Just Instagram. Okay. You know, hit me up if you want something like that. You know, I'm not trying to get too serious about it because you get a website and then you're kind of locked in. You're kind of committed at that point, you know. But I think a website helps eliminate all the tire kickers for sure. Because I get them all the time. And I've actually had some in the past where, you know, you get these people that, you know, they have money, you know, their parents have money, you know, where they live, they have money. You know what I mean?
Their parents.
Well, yeah, but yeah, that, I mean, that's the truth of it, you know? Yeah. And you still get these guys that want to just knock you down and try to whittle you down in price. I'm like, there was one guy that, promised the moon and didn't deliver, you know, well, I'll promote you on this, I'll promote you on that, and never really did. I never really seen anything. I never got any more sales because of it, you know, because of anything he claimed to have done. Mm-hmm. But he wants more baits, and he's like, well, you think you'd give us a discount? And I'm like, sure, I'll give you a discount. And I just went and deleted the whole order. No, I'm just done. I just don't deal with that no more.
Yeah.
I don't want to haggle. It is what it is. Take it or leave it. If you don't like it, go buy someone else's stuff. I'm not here to wheel and deal.
Yeah.
This is what it is. It takes me time. I think a lot of guys, they don't realize the amount of money that you invest to do this stuff in plastics, glitters, colors, and the actual time. You know, like I got a 9-to-5. You know, I work my ass off.
Your wife must
want
to kill you sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's times, I'm sure, but she works retail, so she's not home a lot. You know, when I'm home, it's just her hours are always changing and stuff. And so, I mean, I try to do it, you know, a lot of stuff when I'm alone, but I don't really always have the opportunity to do that. You know, like first couple of years, I sold a lot of baits, you know, and it just kind of petered off because I just kind of stopped promoting it. You know, they got tired of dealing with all the tire kickers and all the critics, you know, and I get easily affected by the internet. I get easily drawn in and it gets me down sometimes, you know. I let it affect me more than it should, you know, and I got to learn. And I've learned a lot the last couple of years to just stay out of, you know, don't get drawn in to debates and bullcrap. Like someone posts something negative, you know, just ignore it and it'll go away type of thing. You don't need to feed the beast. You can't feed the beast because it never stops. And there's one critic, there's another. And I just don't need to be involved in anything online, whether it's political or with the baits. You know, I think the last time I talked about there was what I considered bait wars, you know, it was in my own mind.
We'll talk about the last time we talked. We have a podcast that, everyone had one too many Frosty Butoskis. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that one's not getting released, but we had him on and we talked about Poncho and Gary, and they're talking about bait wars. And if you want to explain that to everyone.
That was my thing. I don't think it was Poncho's thing, or that was in my head.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm talking about. I just let the internet control me too much, and I let it get to me too much, and I read into it too much, you know, and I'm easily affected. It's hard to let stuff run off my back, and you know, because it eats at me, you know. And what I meant by that was, it seemed like back when I was into the mode of, I was trying to promote it a lot more and sell a lot more, I would take kind of a little bit of a break and I wouldn't post for a while, and then I, you know, get inspired, you know, again, and I'd start pouring baits and I'd start posting pictures, and in the meantime I wouldn't. And, you know, at the same time, you wouldn't really hear a lot from from Frank or Gary, you know. But it happened more than once, and it happened several times, and it just got too coincidental for me where I would post a picture of my bait, check it out. It's more of like a check it out kind of thing, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I'd post a picture of my bait, and I shit you not, it seemed to me more than once there would be like Gary or Poncho would post a picture of their stuff like literally 5 minutes later mm-hmm. on top of mine and kind of bury my post, you know what I mean? I'm like, what the F is going on, you know?
But I think that's part of playing into your own head.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, I'm going to say I'm kind of think like you, like if someone pisses me off, I'll shit on them. I need to learn how to stop doing that. Like I'll fucking shit on them and I'll be like, fuck this dude. It's happened to me in this fishing industry, like where someone made me mad and I'm like, fuck this guy, fuck him, talk shit about him all the time. And I probably shouldn't because
yeah,
it's like, why? What is that going to do?
Well, I mean,
I feel like you have like the same kind of like mentality as me.
Yeah, I think it kind of let it get to me. Like I know that's not who they are. I know that's not what they're trying to do.
Exactly.
And, you know,
exactly.
But I think it was all something that I put in my head. And it just, because I said it seemed too coincidental. I get discouraged easily on stuff like that. And I just disappear a while. Then you hear from me again, you know. I just had to learn, Gary's a great guy, you know. Frank's even a good guy, you know. I just got to learn to just, you know, do my thing and not worry and about everyone else's.
You guys
thing.
Got along great.
Like, yeah, no, we're fine. Like, I don't have a problem with Gary. You know, I don't have a problem with Frank. You know, I think Bobby even took us to island one time fishing. me and Frank.
Yeah, Big Poncho. This is a funny story. Tell this story.
We're all day going back and forth. You know, he's throwing his weedless, I'm throwing mine, and I'm getting bit, and he's not. For whatever reason, you know, and I can see he's getting a little frantic and a little discouraged, you know, and so forth and so on. And I was like, I told him, I said, hey, he's not getting bit. I said, hey, I'm going to get bit. I said, you want to use one of my baits? Go ahead. There's a bunch in the bucket. Oh, they don't have, you know, they can melt the plastic down and pour, you know. It's like, well, at least you have good colors then. But that's all. It's just ribbing, you know, and just
yeah,
you know,
just crabbing, fucking around, busting balls, dude. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby was here. He'd tell that story about the Catalina Island.
I'm sure
his big calico he got, and
yeah,
had Frank scooped it up, and he's like, you know, but like Frank said when he was here, well, yeah,
you can tell it.
He gave me props. For, I mean, Frank's not like he's not like that, you know.
But I feel like you guys are like the same together, like. You guys both do something a little different. Your baits are a little more, you have an idea, the wobble's different.
Yeah.
Where Big Poncho has like, his is like more like on the fly, kind of like, I like it just to feel how I'm going to feel.
Yeah.
Where you're like, no, symmetrical. I want to wobble this way. So it's like two different things.
Two different style of baits. And his works really well. He does a really good job. He's really good at what he does, you know, and he's got a lot of guys that like him. I mean, he's like I said, Frank's a good guy. I don't got a problem with Frank. You know, I got a problem with nobody. You know, I just, you know, the problem I had was basically in, like I said, in my head with myself and the internet. And that's why I just had to chill out the last couple of years and just not let, just kind of try to let things run off my back a little more and not take everything so personally, you know. And I think that,
which is easy to do with Instagram and fucking social media. Well, because
I'm insecure with my stuff as it is, you know, because I just don't think it's good enough half the time, you know. And you know, I just got to learn to relax, and it is what it is. A lot of times I make this stuff for me,
you
know, and I make it for a few guys that really like the baits. And, you know, I think Mike was telling me he was with Pearl. He was fortunate to have a lot of really good guys to help him get where, you know, get his bait out there and get the buzz going, you know. And I don't know that I necessarily had that, but at the same time, I don't know that I necessarily wanted it either. You know what I mean, I like, mine was, my thing is like more check out what I did, you know, and when I post pictures, more like, this is pretty cool, check it out. And then I'll get a couple of people say, well, how much would you willing to sell? I said, yeah, you know, if you want some, this is what it is. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to shove it down anyone's throat.
Yeah.
But like I said, you always get the guy on the post that wants to be negative, you know, I forget what it was. I was trying to get rid of a lot of baits, you know, and I think I had four or five of them, and I was trying to sell for like $7 a piece, you know, just get them out of there. And he's like, one guy's like, oh, $45 for four plastics, you know, SMH or some crap like that. I'm like, No one's telling you to buy it, dickhead. Move on. I mean, what the hell? It's always going to be some guy that's just going to...
And I think that's just internet. I think that's something...
Be an a-hole and just say one thing under your breath, but you got to physically type something out. Like, that's another level of asshole, you know?
I think that's just trolls, and that's just the Instagram reality nowadays. But, yeah, I think, I mean, I think people should buy your shit, man. Just same thing with Big Ponchos, Gary's. Like, you guys all have amazing baits. Little different. Everything's something different, you know?
Like I said, it's...
And a pearl. I mean, everyone that's been on here that's talked about baits, I mean, it's like... You guys are all different people, so what you're putting out on your bait is all different. Everything's a little different.
It's just an alternative to what everyone else is. Yeah. It's not the end-all, say-all, you know.
Yeah.
You know, those who know, use it. And those who like them, still use it. But, you know, there's a lot of alternatives out there. You know, Gary makes a good bait. Pearl makes a good bait. You know, Frank makes a good one. Corey makes a good one. Yeah. You know,
Big Hammer never made a weedless, huh?
I think they did.
Really?
I think they tried. It looked just... I think it was kind of a sledgehammer with a rounded off end. Didn't seem to take... I'm not... no offense to that. I just don't really... I mean, that is just too soft plastic for me. I mean, it just really is. It's like a gummy bear, you know what I mean? It's just really too soft. I mean...
Yeah.
But to each his own. They work well. There's been a lot of success. Some people
might like,
I mean, there's been a lot of success with guys that use big hammers. I mean,
I used a Kitek. Is that
Kitek? Yeah, that's
and that soft. Thing fucking fell apart right when But I don't know. I mean, like, I never use one. I use Dameki usually.
Yeah,
and the Damikis last a lot longer, but the Kitek fucking fell apart. And I was like, oh shit. I caught two calico and the fucking thing was bit in half. I'm like, oh.
I know. Yeah, they work good. I mean, that was
they swim really good.
I mean, with that softer plastic, you get more action, a different type of action, but you also lose a lot more, especially when you got like a bait that has a really wonky hook keeper on it. It rips the plastic and then it's, what do you do then?
Then you got to spend another $10 on five baits. But, well, thanks for coming on, Brian. I appreciate it. If you guys want to reach Brian for some really nice weedless lures, he's got all kinds of different ones. So if you message him, I'm sure he can tell you what kind of stuff he's got available or DM you a picture. Where can they reach you? Just at LK Lures?
On Instagram.
Okay.
LK Lures.
Do you have Facebook?
Facebook, too. Okay. Yeah. Facebook, it's just basically there's... I have a page, LK Lures, or just my personal page.
Okay. So help support him. He's been a big help to the podcast. He helped support the podcast with the giveaway he helped out with. So thanks again. Check out his lures. Calico Bite, Weedless Bite's probably going to pick up really good right now. So go grab some, guys. Thanks again, Brian.
Thank you.